quote the Third Doctor, a straight line may be the shortest distance between two points, but it is by no means the most interesting. And we are very interested today here with Nerd Out. Welcome to the show. It's a very special show this week, a very special edition of Nerd Out. Jen Spears is AWOL, but myself and Sandra Felcher are here.
I am here. I am intrigued.
Intrigued and interested. All the I words.
That's it.
So, yes, we are here to have a very special episode of Nerd Out with our very special guest. Can we have a huge round of applause in the studio with all our guests here for Joshua Ladgrove right here?
Ooh. Hello.
How are you?
I'm fairly well.
Fairly well?
Yeah, about a 6.5 out of 10. Probably an 8 health-wise at the moment, which is good.
That's
mentally
excellent.
Trying not to succumb to the sort of incessant background drone of just, you know, constant depression. Other than that, pretty well.
What was the question?
Yeah,
I think you answered everything remarkably well.
I was just doodling and I drew a swastika, so I had to that was really unintentional. It's probably not the best thing to start on, but anyway, I've turned it into the Windows logo.
So, fantastic. That's fantastic. So, yes, we here at Nerd Out every week, we talk about the latest news headlines, we talk about what we've been consuming lately, and review some sort of TV show or movie. But we're going to mix it up this week. We're going to throw the nerd headlines out the window.
Gone.
Yeah, and we're going to find a little bit more about you.
Sure.
Josh?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and what are your nerd qualifications? What nerd things, what things did you get nerdy about when you were growing up?
Oh, a lot. A lot of stuff. What did I get nerdy about? Like, so many things.
Yeah.
So many things. Nintendo was a big one. And not as big as it used to be, but definitely was a huge nerd for Nintendo, particularly the NES and the N64.
Nice.
Sort of skipped a generation with Super Nintendo for some reason. James Bond, definitely. Pokemon. Any form of guitar-driven music.
Fantastic.
Pokemon. Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball GT. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Yep, huge fan. And then Naruto and Yu-Gi-Oh. Cars. Yep, pretty nerdy about cars.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Not
the Pixar film.
Not the admittedly excellent Pixar film. No, just cars themselves. I'm a big car nerd. Maths and science.
Fantastic.
Was a bit of a nerd. Computers, definitely, was a huge. Still am a huge computer nerd and technology.
Well, let's look at the obsession with Nintendo. So you were a part of the whole conflict between Sega and Nintendo. Did you pick sides?
That was fairly resolved. But I think everyone knew. Sega was a little bit cooler because you were a bit of a brat when you had a Sega. It was. You knew it was cooler, but you also knew the company would fail, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
It was very much Nintendo versus PlayStation. PlayStation in that generation, where I argued vehemently for the supremacy of the N64.
Yes.
And when I first played it, it was one of those genuinely life-changing moments. Like, I still very vividly remember being at High Point Shopping Center. Big shout-out to my boys at High Point!
HP,
Knife Point, as it's affectionately known. It's actually fine. It's a totally fine, safe place.
Well, I went there for Avengers: Infinity War and feared for my life at many particular moments.
Really,
particularly when I went to get McDonald's and
McDonald's.
There was like full-on battle in the park outside.
Well, I've actually never seen violence in High Point. I grew up in Werribee, so in Werribee Plaza I'd seen violence.
Yeah.
But no, High Point is as good as anywhere now. I'm nerdy about High Point, genuinely. I really love it. But Nintendo, there was a little caravan, and Nintendo had organized these little caravans to go to big shopping centers,
They
had like TV screens in them. And I was obsessed with N64, like absolutely obsessed with it. Project Ultra, I think it was at the time, nicknamed. And I knew everything about it before it came out, and then when I saw one, and I used the analog stick, and I think I'd seen a PS1. The PS1 was released a little bit before the 64, and I'd seen a PS1, but like I don't know. I wasn't so taken by it. But then when I saw Mario on the N64, it was genuinely like neurons and synapses turned on in my brain that had never been on. And it was a definitive moment. And then when I eventually got one, my mum was like, no, you're not getting one. And then it's like, oh, what's all these things on the table, mum? I think it was Easter or something. I don't know. I'm not that religious, but I got it as an Easter gift. And I was like, she's like, oh, it's saucepans. And, I was like, oh, it looks a lot like an N64 and an extra controller. And it was. And I was like doing cartwheels. I was just unstoppably excited.
Now, was it just a regular N64? Was one of the special edition ones? Was it like a...
No, it was a regular one. I think we got Mario, GoldenEye and Mario Kart.
Wow.
Okay. Took us a long time to figure out... Yeah, absolute classics. Couldn't open the first door in the dam level of GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Just took months for us to pick it up and play the game again. And then, you know, clocking that game was another highlight of my youth. But I do remember one... I grew up a little bit poor and single mum and all that, and one older brother. This, just a lesson for anyone. Feign joy at whatever gift you're ever given, because one Christmas I was given... Well, I wanted two games. I wanted... Jet Force Gemini, the Rare, which is a fantastic game, and I possibly also wanted a Zelda game. And I remember just, it was a lean Christmas, and I got two gifts, two little wrapped up N64 games, and one was Tetris, and the other was something equally or more shit.
Dr. Mario, or?
Oh, no, I would have been happy with Dr. Mario, but it was like, it was a bad game, right. And it was written all over my face, and my mum was so upset. So from there on in, I have been the most... overjoyed, sort of overzealous present opener and gift receiver.
Yep, with GameCube as well. That was one that, yeah.
GameCube was a bit of a flop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Decent enough console.
There were some good games on it. That's like where Lego Star Wars came in.
Yeah, Lego Star Wars.
I grew up playing for
there was
a while.
There was a really cool couple of GameCube-only games, like, I forget.
Edit that all. Well, they out. Did like they
it's
did...
about runes. It's got runes in it.
Well, they tons did Mario Kart Double Dash, which I haven't done anywhere else. Where you did the you could flip around and you could control work together on the same kart.
Yeah, I have that.
Yeah,
on the emulator.
Oh, really?
Because Dolphin runs GameCube and Wii games.
Yes, because I've got my Wii and I've got a couple of GameCubes because they backwards compatible. So.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Wii U is a really good console at the moment because it's basically as good as the Switch.
There's no games on it, but like it's all right.
Yeah.
I guess Mario Kart's pretty good on
Mario
the Wii U.
Mario Kart, Zelda.
Zelda's all right. But aside from that, I never really bothered with that console because I was just like, none of these games interest
me. But I'm a PC gamer now. I mean, I have a workhorse PC with an i7 and 32 gig of RAM and all that, and it's like, well, I bought my video card whilst I was in the States right before... Bitcoin mining blew up. So I put a 470, an AMD RX 470 in there.
Yeah.
Got it for $190. Turns out that video card has the perfect price to power consumption ratio and is now $800 on eBay. And I refuse to sell it because that's the level of capitalism. That's where I tap out with capitalism.
Yeah.
Like, capitalism is great up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point where I don't like it anymore. So even though I could sell it at a profit, it's like, oh, Bitcoin. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a whole other...
Yeah.
So this is just from one of your loves. We're going to have a great time today. So we're going to go to a next section, about what we've been consuming lately.
Ooh.
So the things that we have been watching recently over the last couple of weeks or so.
Yeah.
And obviously we have all come off the back of Comedy Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So we may have a little bit more possible free time on our hands if we can to find some type of time to consume stuff. So we'll start with our special guest. So, Josh, what have you been consuming lately?
Not a great deal. I did watch – I told you outside earlier and I lied to your faces because I forgot. I watched Wild, Wild Country. And it's
a couple episodes back.
It's the best documentary I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it just overtook King of Kong for me as the best documentary I've ever seen. And King of Kong had a very special place in my heart.
And there's been new news about King of Kong
with Steve Wiebe being eliminated. It's very funny.
Oh, best news ever.
But his hot sauce business is doing very well, so he's fine. He's an independently very wealthy man.
Yeah.
But Wild Wild Country, if you haven't seen it, and if you're listening to this and you have access to Netflix, it is brilliant. Mm. It's the best documentary I've ever seen. It's got everything. It's got tension, drama. It's true. They're doing it as, you know, as a bit of a retrospective. So there's people 30 years on, and you still see. So it's, if you don't know what it's about a cult. Well, not a cult, like a religion in a sense, or a commune, I guess, would be the kindest way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's all these different perspectives. So you get the perspective of Sheila, who was the sort of second in command of the whole thing, beneath the Bhagwan or Osho, or and then they went to this tiny little American town and basically overtook it and moved this commune from India to this little town, and it caused all this upheaval. But there's people who still swear that it was the best time of their lives and that what they were doing was very pure, and that they've just misunderstood. So it's, but there was, it got insane to the point where they had their own militia and they were poisoning the water supply. Oh, and
it was pretty crazy.
It's completely fascinating. Fascinating stuff.
And
it's a doco series, so it's not just a
about 6 hours.
Yeah.
6 hours, which I think, the girlfie and I watched just in two nights.
Okay.
So it was, it's so Moorish.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, I don't know if you'd watched, not Serial, but the, what's the, Making a Murderer?
Yep.
Where it's, it, you know, it's also great, but it's just very one-sided. It's very on the case of, on the side of Stephen Avery.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it really vacillates between the two points of view, and it's quite interesting.
Yeah, because you've got the lawyer, I guess, for the Ragnishis really pushing the fact that everything they were doing was good.
Isn't he an interesting
and
guy?
It's just like, oh, it's interesting that he would even talk to them and do it. Like, the fact that this got made is amazing. The fact that Sheila's in it as well.
Sheila is an incredible human. You just, I mean, and the fact she's working with the elderly now is like, it's, there's just so much. I mean, I cried a lot watching it. And also because I guess I'm a bit fed up with just trying to find my place in the world and trying to, you know, fit. There's a lot of people, I think, at that stage trying to fit, trying to insert themselves into the giant jigsaw puzzle. And the idea of the commune is actually, like, there is something to it, that simplicity and that reconnection to Mother Nature and the reconnection to other people and getting off. You know, if it weren't for comedy and music, I would delete all my social media in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less about anyone else. I'm really sick of seeing other people's lives. I don't particularly care. I'd catch up with them in person.
Yeah.
I think it's much as lovely. This is lovely. This is human, you know, doing a podcast. And listening to podcasts is at least some form of human connection. But Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff, it's just soul-sapping.
Mm-hmm.
And this, in many ways, the idea of a commune is... You know, I probably need all my music equipment because I feel very lost without music equipment. But other than that, the ideas and the free love bit, yeah, that sounds all right. And they claim they had no venereal diseases in the whole commune.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's not bad, is it?
That is a fine achievement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Free love.
So one thing we do with consuming lately is we rate the thing that we watched.
11.
Out of...
Yes, you explained the rating system that you wanted us to use.
So it's out of 5, but we don't say it's out of 5. Mm-hmm. The lowest rating is 2 thumbs down, 1 thumb down, kind of like a shrug, like a schmeh in the middle, then 1 thumb up, 2 thumbs up. What would you rate?
I would rate this 3 thumbs up. I would enlist the help of another person to give me an extra thumb because it is absolutely...
Added mine for you.
It's 3 thumbs up. Thank you. It really is... It really is that good. And the music and the production and the quality, the cinematic nature of the modern footage versus the retro old footage is an incredible juxtaposition. And all I would say to give a mark against it is that Wild Wild Country is a shit name.
I thought it was like some sort of, you know, Western series or something like that.
And I understand their reason for going with that. But calling it like, you know, Chasing the Bhagwan or something like that, there's a level of intrigue with a name like that. But Wild Wild Country is a terrible name.
Yeah. Wild Wild is very generic, isn't it? They've pulled back.
It's very generic. It's very generic. And but I think it has taken off a bit already.
Yes.
So it's very good. It's very fascinating.
There's a lot of people talking about it. A lot of people just you know water cooler stuff, just engaging in that conversation, which is what you want in a documentary, especially when it's so based on real events. And to hear that it expands upon the simple just talking heads format of to have so much footage.
It's so engrossing. There are so many different points of view, and they're so level-headed about their presentation of it.
That's really cool.
They've got the point of view of the townspeople whose town was taken over, basically, this tiny town. I mean, it's an insane story, and the stuff that Sheila does is it's literally insane.
Yeah.
And then eventually, you know, spoilers, but it's eventually criminal behavior, and it's very fascinating. And I find that cult of personality stuff, be it political or cult or even performer, mm-hmm. or musicians, you mm-hmm. know, it can be anything, really.
It's an intoxicating way of letting yourself go, which people...
Charles Manson, you know, the same thing. Yeah. People, I met someone who knew someone who was in the cult, so it was 2 degrees of separation, and they said that he was just so magnetic.
Yeah.
Just so magnetic.
People do that.
Yeah. We should start a cult.
We should. Podcast is the way to go.
Yeah.
Speaking of charismatic, the people, Sandra Felcher.
Why is that stuck?
It's going to stick. It's great. What have you been consuming lately?
Not much. Not much at all. Speaking of games, actually, that reminded me that I played Telltale's Batman Series 2.
Telltale's
The
Batman.
Enemy Within. So if you aren't familiar with Telltale, they are, I think they're still technically an independent company that adapt stories like The Walking Dead. They did Guardians of the Galaxy last year. Fables, if you're familiar with that comic realm. They have done Batman, and they've kind of taken it and done kind of like a Darkest Timeline kind of twist to it. No spoilers, but straight from the top, you are introduced to a Gotham and a Wayne family that is nothing like you have ever seen. It's quite dark. And so with season 2, they took that and they introduced a bunch of the villains. So it's called The Enemy Within. What can I say about the plot? Harley Quinn, Bane, Mr. Freeze, and a form of the Joker kind of create this team. You, as Bruce Wayne, are pretty much joined up with Argus to infiltrate that team because you're friends with the Joker. That's a really cool, it's one of the best Joker origins ever, because he's just like some guy called John Doe and you're friends with him, and then you're like, hang on a second, probably shouldn't be friends with this guy near the end of the series.
How does it rate, you know, compared to Arkham Asylum or anything like that?
So the gameplay is what a lot of people don't like about it, because there isn't any. You're just watching a film and making dialogue choices. And you're kind of shaping the story rather than playing it.
It's like a choose your own adventure.
Fascinating.
So the game is split into five episodes. They're each just under 2 hours long each, so you can like treat them as like one film that you watch. It ends on a cliffhanger, then like you can kind of carry through the whole series over the course of maybe a week, which is what I did. Just watch it, make decisions, be like, why did I make that decision? They won't let you redo it, though. You got to stick with it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's like a time limit as well. So, really, really good stuff. I can't
just
really...
sounds stressful. Doesn't sound entertaining at all.
Okay. I can see why. It is kind of like that choose your own adventure type of... But yeah, there is like an element of, oh, why did I do that?
But there's no walking around bopping villains and like...
There is no...
No kaplowies, no zoinks.
You can choose battle options, and there is like a little bit more of that. So you can choose to be more aggressive or more kind of like, you know, you hurt them, but you're not really doing that much damage. Like, they give you that decision, which is kind of cool, because by the end of the game, you can very much be playing an incredibly unhinged Batman that's more similar to the Punisher than Batman.
Wow.
It's a really, really entertaining thing. Again, though, it is 10 hours, probably too long, would be my one thing. I'd give it like one thumb up. I'd say it's probably worth checking out if you're a Batman fan. Again, the best Joker origin I've ever witnessed.
Who voices the Joker?
I'm not 100% sure.
Is it the same as the Arkham Asylum guy? Because that guy's the real deal. He's the best voice.
Didn't Mark Hamill do the first?
Mark Hamill did the first couple for Arkham, and then they swapped him out for Origins or something. I'm going to check who did it.
Yeah, because Mark Hamill did the animated series in the 90s.
And then his laugh is incredible.
His laugh's amazing. Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
He inhabits that role so beautifully. So what do you rate it?
Yeah, I give it one thumb up.
One thumb up?
Yeah, one thumb up. It's pretty good. They set up some fun... I think they're going to do another season. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, like, as a Batman fan, it's good. If you aren't a Batman fan, or if you aren't a fan of this type of gameplay, you're going to get nothing here. So, interesting.
I'm a Batman fan, but the gameplay sounds... I mean, but sometimes you want a game that you don't want to do too much. Like, I was playing Doom during the Comedy Festival a little bit, because I bought it, for $12 on Steam ages ago, you know. That's how they suck you in on Steam. Like, hey, our games are cheap. Like, 800 games, you played 8 minutes of each later.
Yeah.
But, you don't want to think too much. Like, you don't want to do too much. So a game like that sounds like it could actually just, okay, read, make a quick choice, and then move on. Actually sounds...
Yeah, yeah. It is more like you are, like, watching a TV show rather than...
Yeah, right. So it's in between watching a TV show and playing an actual game.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Cool. Yeah. And,
what's it called again?
Batman the Telltale series is season one, and then the Enemy Within.
Is it on PC?
Season two. Yes, it almost definitely is. And it's, like... It's better optimized for PC as well. I played it on PS4, and the frame rates at the very start of each episode are not great. And then it slowly gets better, because they are still an independent company, so the optimization can be a little bit not great at times, like most games on the PS4, unfortunately, because it's a weird platform.
I actually smashed an Xbox controller today.
Oh, really?
If you want to know what I've been up to. Yep, completely smashed.
What brought that on? What was the moment that...
So, my brother has been using the Golden State Warriors in NBA 2K18. And I don't know if you know basketball, but Steph Curry basically can shoot three-pointers from almost half court. And in the game, it's not that different. And I've made the settings as realistic as possible. And we've got it on the hardest setting because we're both quite decent at basketball. But I just got fed up.
Yeah.
Just got fed up. I think it was almost a draw. I used the Rockets, and then we went to overtime, and then it just got silly to the point where every pass I was doing was getting stolen, and every layup I was doing was getting blocked, but then I couldn't stop him. So finally lost it. That controller's been begging for it for ages. Like, the A button was a bit sticky. Anyway, so I just got really peeved and smashed it, and it's in the bin now.
Which
is not like me. But that's how much it got to me.
Wow.
Never broken it. Oh, there was one time I was playing the bowling game on Wii and almost smashed the controller, but...
Out of rage? Out of anger?
No, just out of... Just forgot to strap it on.
No, I have a latent rage deep within me. Yeah.
If you don't have a rage moment with a computer game at least once where you just hold the thing, you know, that moment and go, do I, don't I?
I never have before. I've smashed and not broken plenty of times. But this time, I was determined to smash it and make my case. And can I just say, fuck you, Golden State Warriors. I hope the Rockets sweep you in four. I'm so sick of them. So sick of the Warriors.
What have you been consuming lately, Rob?
Yeah, look, I've been the same. I've been a little bit of catch-up with shows that I've seen, watching with the girlfriend, with Caitlin. So we caught up. She wanted to watch Queer Eye, the new Queer Eye. So we watched that and saw that positive energy that needs to be back in the world. We've been watching starting Westworld season two, so two episodes into that, and we're a little bit skeptical at the moment, just as I won't give away too much spoilers, and we will talk about it later, but just we're approaching it not fully embracing it, going, oh, this is going to be the best thing ever. We're going, no, you have to earn our trust back.
I'm thinking I might binge the season. I think this is one not to watch weekly. Just, I don't know, there's just something about it that I'm like, if I watch this weekly, I'm going to get fed up.
Yeah. I'm feeling it a little bit along those lines. So, I've been going back and watching stuff from my childhood. So, Caitlin and I picked up copies of our favorite versions of Alice in Wonderland when we were kids. So she had a version from the noughties, I had a version from the 80s, and really just random stuff like that, waiting to just premiere this show and organizing my UK tour. So I've been up all hours doing visa stuff, which is so much fun. So this is the first week I am coming hideously underprepared for what have I been consuming lately, but it's a great thing having Josh here, so we can just pick his brain for the rest of it. I've barely watching anything. It's an appalling time for me to be a nerd. So, but yes, I want to get back to Josh and the obsessions that you have. Let's focus on James Bond.
Sure.
Let's focus on Bond, because I wasn't into Bond as a kid, because I was a scrawny, nerdy kid, and I like my Sherlock Holmes and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I'm a big Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. I was that young kid who went, I can either like one or the other. But I've really gotten into Bond recently.
Interesting. So with the last in what way?
Well, I really liked Daniel Craig's interpretation of it. Sure. So I kind of had a passing interest in Brosnan. But then when Daniel Craig hit the scene, there was a new approach to it. Especially the first one was so heavily influenced by the Bourne films, which I found very...
Casino Royale?
Yeah, Casino Royale.
Yes, it was, and it wasn't, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
But I've cut you off.
Yeah, and then it went completely off the deep end with Quantum of Solace, which was, not... a Bond film at all.
No, it's not really their fault, though.
No, it was the writer's strike, and so it was just one chase scene after the other. And then solidifying things back into the old school way of doing things with Skyfall, let's get it back to, the traditional way of doing it.
Yeah, Skyfall was an interesting one because it's one of the highest rated Bond films ever now.
Yes.
I think that they just sort of pull the wool over people's eyes a little bit. I don't actually think it's a good film. In fact, I think it's a bad film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a film that is broken into two very distinct halves, and that when you notice those halves, which I did whilst watching it, and when you notice that the second half is basically adult Home Alone, building a trap for the big bad villain Javier Bardem, whose talent was wasted.
So wasted.
As a very over-the-top villain. Not as bad as the part... What was the last film? Not Skyfall, but...
Spectre.
Spectre, which was, the villain there, Christopher Waltz.
Blofeld, that
whole thing was just... was it Blofeld?
I think it was mentioned.
Zoned out halfway through.
Yeah, I don't know that they ever specifically referred to him as Blofeld. But and if I'm wrong, I'm happily corrected. But the thing for me that there is a distinct trend to note with probably not Sean Connery, but with Roger Moore onwards, and excluding George Lazenby, whose film was actually okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig made an excellent first Bond, and the films are excellent, and then the rest they made are meh. Roger Moore's got some okay other ones as well, but if you specifically look at Timothy Dalton's first, which I think is Living Daylights, it's incredible. It's an incredible film. He was the only actor to have read the books, and to understand the original. So when Fleming was writing the character, that it was a dark, broken man with demons, and he was he was a ladies' man and all that. He was also an alcoholic and had all these issues, and the womanizing wasn't supposed to be glamorous. It was supposed to be a sign of a very broken character.
Yeah.
And Timothy Dalton played that really well, real humorless Bond, basically.
Yes.
And when the gags come in, they're so dry that you almost miss them. But I love that. That's very British for me. Pierce Brosnan with Goldeneye, which is probably my favourite Bond film. It's perfect. It's the perfect storyline.
Yeah.
It's an 006 as his evil counterpart villain, the fallen angel.
Mm.
Alan Cumming playing Boris Grishenko. The whole it's in Russia, which is what you want. You want Bond villains to be Russian, or maybe like Moroccan or something weird. not that Moroccan's weird, but just something a bit more esoteric than Russia. But Goldeneye has all the ingredients of just a good film, and then there's only a couple of soppy love scenes that they on the beach with Natalia that they probably could have filmed. But Xenia on a top, just her name and her being a real badass female character in a time where there weren't that many badass female characters, to be honest.
Famke Jensen pulling out all the stops.
Right, she's terrific. So that, and then Casino Royale. I don't think any Daniel Craig film has even come close to it. And I don't know whether my liking for the first film is because it's a refresh, and so you're watching with this, what are they going to do with it? And it's inherently more interesting, because the rest of the Pierce Brosnan films, in my view, were rubbish.
Yeah.
But Casino Royale was good for many reasons. Firstly, Daniel Craig was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think as good as Pierce Brosnan in Goldeneye, if not a bit better.
And there was so much negativity towards... Daniel Craig
because he looks like he's been smacked over the head with a cricket bat. He's a weirdly... It depends on what camp you're in, whether you find him attractive or not, as aesthetically.
Yeah.
I think he looks like a boy who like they stretched out upwards and sideways a bit. He's got, he's very boyish looking, but he's very old looking
as
well.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's been boxed about. But the way they took that novel, Casino Royale, which is definitely one of the better novels of Fleming's, I mean, it's the first. It's it's also just one of the best written, I think. Took him a while to top that. It's really beautiful the way they paid homage to the novel.
Yeah.
Really accurately. It's one of the only films that really does it well. The character gets back to being a darker Bond because as Fleming was writing and they made the films, Fleming then started changing his writing style to accommodate the fact that there would be more people reading his books who've seen the films, and so he turned his Bond character into Sean Connery.
Right.
Yeah. Which was never the case for the first four or five novels, I think. So Daniel Craig comes out and plays this badass, brutal character, and then you get the sense of that immediately, that there's no grace to his James Bond when the guy's doing parkour up that building and Craig just runs through the drywall.
Yeah.
And that is the best metaphor. And then the rest of that film and the fact that Vespa dies, and it's, you know, it's a little bit touching, and it's just done so well. And the villain was perfect, and him not being the premier villain left on the great Fleming hook.
Yeah.
The rest of the films just failed to live up to that promise. But Skyfall looks good. It's a good-looking film.
It looks very good.
It has the best DP of just about any action film, much better than the Bourne films, I think.
Oh, the sequence in the Scottish Highlands in those...
Stunning, stunning. And incredible. The building in Hong Kong or wherever it is, it's all visually stunning. But as a film, it's a bit of fluff, I think.
Yeah, that came out the same year as The Dark Knight Rises, I think. And I have the same opinion for both of them in that... They're both very ambitious, and I respect what they're doing, but they're way too long, and they just... The amount of stuff in the film just doesn't require the length of the film. It should have been like an hour and a half.
Dark Knight Rises with Bane, or...?
Yeah, the Bane one, which is probably a worse film than Skyfall.
I don't agree, actually. I think it's a better film than Skyfall, but and I like the way it wrapped up. And I also have a soft spot for the third Matrix.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, because I think they did a really tidy job script-wise. I think it's actually, if it were a book and you were reading a script adapted into a book, I think you would be very satisfied.
Sure.
I think that there was just so much fatigue with it that it probably should have been two films, really.
Yes.
Where, unlike Lord of the Rings, where there was so much to condense and there was so many parallel storylines, only following one storyline meant that we were a bit bored of it, that the special effects... You know, you'd even go back and watch The Matrix now, and it's stunning. Watch the second and third.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the original, and just it got a bit bloated and it got too caught up with itself.
And then, of course,
all three
copyright. It is. I mean, it's well worth seeing.
Should see it.
I actually love the way, and I don't know if you've read this, that, well, when they're out of The Matrix and. It's how many years? There's no spoilers.
That's right.
But when they're out of the Matrix and they're in the Nebuchadnezzar, and the Agent Smith comes into the other evil guy who's made the pact, that they're not actually out of the Matrix, and that Zion and everything, it's just all part of another Matrix. And I've read a massive online dissertation, probably the length of a novel. It took weeks to read. And I was convinced by the end of it, like, wow, this is really compelling. And I go through really analytically and analyze why he's still in the Matrix, because where does Neo's power come from to stop those sentinels once he's out of the Matrix?
Like, that's true.
It's just all another Matrix.
It's all part of, yeah.
So that for me was like, mind-blowing. When you go and watch the third film with that in mind, I can guarantee it becomes infinitely more interesting.
Right.
Okay. And really watchable, and then really freaking clever.
Yeah.
Really clever.
I feel like that's just a staple of the Wachowskis. A lot of their... Pretty much everything they've made is okay surface level, but then you look at like what went into it and you're like, oh, this is actually the previous film they made
I just watched for the lesbionics.
Was that one? Lie.
Bound.
Was it Bound?
Bound's great.
Bound?
But I was at that age where I was like, I just, you know.
Oh, before Matrix.
That was their first one. Yeah, Jennifer Tilly and Gina Gershon.
Okay.
And
well, like,
it's, oh.
Cloud Atlas for example, I'm a huge defender of that, Sense 8, the fact that they film all around the world and it's like one of the most expensive TV shows ever made.
Do they do Sense 8?
Yeah. Which is wrapping up in a month. Yeah,
they're finally going to do it. That's so good.
Hey, have either of you guys watched the Lethal Weapon series? Because I am a big Lethal Weapon fan and it was being filmed. So I worked on a Netflix show in the States a while back and they were filming Lethal Weapon there and they had a boat. We were filming on this pier and there was a boat that we couldn't go near. And I was like, why is there a security guard at this boat? Is there someone famous? He's like, oh no, it's full of explosives for Lethal Weapon. and I remember thinking, I love Lethal Weapon. Geez, I am sounding like an anti-Semite now. I'm a Mel Gibson, big Mel Gibson fan. I do love the Lethal Weapon films, the first three. And I remember thinking the series should be good, but I haven't heard anything about it. And I don't have Netflix.
It was renewed. It's Damon Wayans playing Murtaugh, and he's been on right from the start. And they had someone up for Riggs, but he dropped out. And so the guy
he dropped out?
There was someone. I don't know
who
it was.
Why would you drop out of that?
I have no idea what it was. But the guy that got in to play Riggs was a last minute decision. And so
the guy in the first season, you mean?
Yeah. Okay. So he was last, but his contract is up for grabs,
so they
because
might get someone
else. Because of his behavior on set. There's been a lot of talk about inappropriate behavior and he's quite aggressive and he's causing a lot of tension on set.
You can't be a dick anymore. This is the best thing about Me Too, is apart from the self-reflection making you look at those times in your own life where you've gone, oh, if I could, take a little white out to that, but which is good and I think necessary, but it's also great that you just can't be, male or female,
mm-hmm.
you can't be a dick anymore.
No.
And I think that's so good.
And you can't pull it off it's just a prankster. Oh, he's just a tortured artist.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You know, you be a professional.
Yeah,
show up to work.
Be a nice person. And I think everyone gets a couple of free passes in their 20s to be a dick. And then, but by the time, I reckon, but like as a male, by the time you're 30, if you haven't got your shit together.
There's no
excuses. I mean, I don't have my life together.
The life and shit
life
are two
and shit
different.
Are different. But my shit's together, and you got to look at things. I mean, imagine getting an opportunity like that, where you did get second. You were second in line for this thing. Like Peter Sellers stories actually, where he was second in line.
That's right.
To John Landau, I think, and was never happy with that in the Pink Panther. But anyway, getting that opportunity and then blowing it because you're a knob.
Yeah, yeah. And that's been the main thing because everyone's going, it's been a success. It's going to be...
But was he good on screen? Heath Ledger would have been good in that role.
Mm. Heath Ledger would have been great as...
Rest in peace.
That would have been good. Anyway.
I wish I was more up with my Lethal Weapon knowledge.
Those first couple of films are fantastic. Same as Die Hard.
Yeah.
Die Hard 1, 2, 3... All excellent.
Four's all right. Wait, which one's four?
No. That's Timothy Oliphant.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, no, they really get bad real fast.
Justin Long. Yeah. Oh, the one in Russia is just...
Couldn't bring myself to watch it.
You're a smart man.
Yeah, because I hated four so much.
Yeah.
And then Lethal Weapon 4 just scraped by as a bit of an homage to the first three.
Yeah.
But just.
Because I adore... Die Hard with a Vengeance so much. The third one is
The third one is Lethal Weapon 3 and Die Hard 3 are perfect action films.
Yeah.
Perfect action films.
And and Die Hard 3 was shaped up to be in original script form a version for a Die Hard a Lethal Weapon script. That's why
Was it really?
Bruce Willis has teamed up with Samuel Jackson's character because he always works on his own in the first two ones.
Well, there's the other black cop who sort of doesn't he's helps him out over the phone.
Always on the phone. I'm here to help you out. You know, he's the lifeline. So it was taken and then adjusted and crammed into the Die Hard world,
it works so well with the racist sandwich board at the start. Oh. It's just that there's tension from the first second, which is so cool.
Just
so
incredible. Cool. You're just thrown right into it. So did you get into Bond through the movies first, or the novels, or did
no? The definitely the movies. And I don't know specifically how or why. I guess they would have been on television at some point, so I would have watched some.
They were on all the time.
James Bond Jr. It was a TV, a great gateway, which is one of my favourite ever cartoons, actually. I guess I would have watched a lot of the Sean Connery films, and then I have a memory of seeing Goldeneye in a cinema with my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the audiobooks narrated by... he's the winningest ever audiobook narrator, Simon Vance.
Right.
and he's outstandingly good. His audiobooks are unmatched. He did a couple of... No, he didn't do Sherlock. He did the autobiography of...
Arthur Conan Doyle. Oh, great.
It's a bit of a slog to get through that, admittedly. Even as a fan, it's slow. It's the pace of it's very slow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, the Vance's... audio narration is just outstanding. He's the absolute gold standard. And so whatever the Oscars are for voiceover, he's won them all.
And that's a whole other world, isn't it?
Like it's a whole other world.
Audio books and the the people who...
Yeah. I'm also thinking of doing a podcast that's like an audio book.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be fun, like serialized.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just loved Bond forever. And then GoldenEye and then 64. It was really definitive, like shaped so much of my life.
And okay. And it has shaped so many people. That GoldenEye game is amazing, just how revered it is and how much it's, you know, a moment in time that people hold so dear.
Yeah, it's still one of the best ever first-person shooters. And Grant Kirkhope, who did the music for that, who was a Rare employee, and Rare went in that in that N64 era, were definitely the best game developers. I still don't think anyone's ever matched their output. Maybe 2K games, possibly, as a publisher.
Okay.
But they were a second-tier developer for Nintendo. They were the only ones. Mm-hmm. So there was it was Nintendo were first tier, Rare were second tier, and no one else. And then third party. So they had a very interesting place. And I emailed Grant Kirkhope saying, look, do you have any MP3s of all the music?
Right.
From GoldenEye, and they said, no, we've lost all the original WAV files. He emailed me and said, but I do have these like slightly lower quality ones, which were still fine.
Yeah.
And he sent me them all, and I just said, I just want to thank you so much. Like, if I'm ever walking down a staircase at Melbourne Uni, I just want you to know that like I have archives music in my head. And he was very flattered and very chuffed and a very, very nice man. And then 3 months after that, someone found all the original WAV files and uploaded them to the internet.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it was great little victory.
Do you have a favourite Bond and a favourite story?
I mean, Pierce Brosnan and Gold... It depends on... It's context-driven because, Craig in Casino Royale, Brosnan in GoldenEye, Dalton in Living Daylights, huge soft spot for Connery and Moore took it in that more campy direction.
Yeah.
And Connery's one, you know, you see him slapping women and stuff. It's an uncomfortable thing to watch.
It really
now.
Is.
You watch it, you're like, ugh. Settle down, woman. Slap. It's like, oh, man, is that you would have made a shit doctor. I think Pierce Brosnan will always be my image of James Bond. I think Dalton is the most true to the novels, and Craig just had that perfect dry humor, and I loved him in Layer Cake as well, and he brought that same, there was a bit of that character that I think he brought to Bond,
definitely.
So no, I don't really have a favorite, but I have, in terms of the story, Casino Royale is up there, and GoldenEye is probably my favorite film. With the books, yeah, probably Goldfinger. Because it's a little different to the films.
Yeah,
there's a lot they left out in that film. Yeah.
Interesting.
And some of the new books and new novels, there's... I forget who wrote the new ones. There was an author who did about 10 of them, and then there was another author who's since done 2 or 3, and another author who's done, I think, 1. And there should be a new one coming out this year.
Oh, okay.
But they're a little, you know, they're not so interesting. Fleming was a legitimately good writer.
He
wrote Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yes, he did.
And so this guy knew how to entertain people. The idea of the page turner, like by and large, comes from Fleming. The Fleming hook, ending a chapter on a dramatic note. He literally invented that in popular writing.
Yeah.
Oh, man, he have invented it, but he certainly popularized it. And they're well written. Some of the other books, you'll read them, and they're, you know, they're very verbose. Bond took his 24-carat Rolex Dive Master, and it's like, I don't know. It's a bit long-winded.
One thing I do want to finish up with is you did mention you're a car fan, and and you go back and watch Top Gear.
I non-ironically love Top Gear.
That's I want to find out what is.
I'm not painting the most flattering picture of myself.
I beg to differ. I think you're doing a great job. To explain Top Gear to me as someone who watches it from the outside and only hears all the controversy and all that type of stuff.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought that you were... Okay, cool.
No, I'm not... Yeah, you, Top Gear.
I'm well into Top Gear.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, it's just pure entertainment. So I'm also... Like, it needs some context, firstly, that in the sense that I love cars. I used to be an engineer.
Right.
Always had a thing for cars. So there's that engineering-y side to me already. I don't love all shows about cars, otherwise I'd watch Fifth Gear, which is terribly boring. There's a great guy on YouTube who does a channel called Car Wow, and he's great, and it's a bit more focused on cars, but he's so excited by it. So Top Gear now, with the current host, with Matt LeBlanc and Rory Reid and Matt Harris, it's you know, it doesn't capture the same spirit, but it's still an interesting car show. It's still fun. It's okay if you watch it for what it is. Every now and then, people come together in a way that you cannot manufacture.
Yeah.
There is something about Jeremy Clarkson and Richard Hammond and James May that, and it's possibly peaked because I watched the Grand Tour as well, and it's never been as good, but the magic and the chemistry that they have prior to everything being too scripted, and when it really comes to play is when it's not scripted, it's when they go on their specials.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is just pure entertainment in the way that I imagine a bit of Graham Kennedy, Burt Newton may have... Well, not may, I've watched a lot of that.
But yeah.
There's something... You know, why do Hamish and Andy work, for instance? Why do the two Kates from the catering show work? The girls from Broad City, why, you know, the cast of Atlanta at the moment. There's just the cast of Seinfeld. You imagine, take out Jason Alexander as George Costanza and put in... You know, so who's the parrot from Aladdin?
It's a Gilbert Godfrey.
You know, put someone else in, and it just doesn't work. Yeah. Or put Newman, Wayne, whatever his name is,
Wayne Knight.
Good knowledge. put Newman in as George. It doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
There's something about. I mean, Jeremy Clarkson is. I mean, he's an oaf. He's an ass. He's a walking controversy machine. But he's also hyper intelligent.
Yes.
Is generally aware of what he's doing and saying.
Oh, yeah.
And
his background wasn't really in television presenting, was it? He was
like a lot of writing and stuff.
Yeah, he was a car journalist for ages and then just got into Top Gear when it was what Fifth Gear is now, a far more serious car journalism show.
Yeah.
But he's a smart ass.
Yeah.
And he's a boyish smart ass. And the chemistry they have is great. James May just being pissed off at them and being cantankerous and Richard Hammond being like this idiot. When they contrive it too much, it doesn't work. And you can see that, and it's not fun. But when stuff goes off pissed a little bit and they're just annoyed at each other or modifying their cars while one of them's asleep, it's genuinely as good as anything else I've ever seen entertainment-wise. And part of me, and you know, you saw my show. I think you saw a very bad version of my show. I have to apologise.
I saw it twice.
But
that was the final one. That was great.
The final one was lovely, wasn't it? That was a bit special. But I say this like live entertainment and live comedy, and particularly on television, because television's just slowly dying. You don't see much of it, and it can exist, and it should exist.
Yeah,
and you know, Tom Ballard doing Tonightly is, you know, hinting towards what live TV is. And I think he does a very good job with that. And I got a little love for Tom. But I would love to see that. I would probably watch it way more than I do if it were live.
Yeah.
And I would crave...
Yeah, that would be good.
Because you can still put it online, right? But that element of liveness is just missing from a lot of things. And I guess that's why reality TV, it fills that gap for a lot of people. And it has that sense of drama and tension and aliveness that a lot of other stuff doesn't have, even though it's very hyper-produced. But
is that spark and that connection between the people, so it doesn't seem as... Well, there are moments when it can't be contrived because something may happen or a line comes out wrong and you have to be able to be in that moment.
Mm. You have to be good, firstly. So there's this base level of talent you need to be in possession of, and Clarkson... You can watch Clarkson by himself, and he's demonstrated that. He actually had his own show for a little while.
Yes.
Not very good, but...
He's got a couple of specials out, I think, as well.
He's got a couple of specials out. He's the host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire at the moment, and he's doing a great
really?
Job.
Oh, wow.
No, it is... Like, look it up on YouTube.
I need to watch that.
It's genuinely... So they just did it... I think it's been off air 20 years in the UK. It was Chris Tarrant as the... Or someone, Matt Tarrant or something, as the host. And he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's exceeded expectations. And you go through YouTube comments saying, didn't think Jezza would pull it off, but it's pretty damn good. And he is very charismatic, very confident.
Yeah.
And very funny. And there's something about Top Gear, that mix of cars and... It is boyishness, and maybe I know that the world is moving on from that boyishness and too much white male representation, and that's good. That's, I think, as it should be. But there's still a place for it. Like, it should still be a niche, like anything else. And Hamish and Andy have that boyish quality as well. And I went to university, 7 years of engineering. Like, there was no females in my course. It was very boyish, and so a lot of my humour is forged in that, for better or worse, and it resonates with me. And that's not to say I wouldn't watch three women who have excellent rapport. I mean, I think I can watch Ellen DeGeneres even on her midday show because she's that good.
Yeah.
She's that talented and that funny. So it's not just about three blokes, but they do have this special rapport.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Josh, for coming along and joining us on this very special edition of Nerd Out.
Quel plaisir.
And Sandro, what are our plans for the next couple of episodes coming up?
The big special solo. We got a guest for that as well, which is going to be exciting.
Can we reveal who the guest is?
Sure. It's one of my good friends. Just released an EP called Akbars, which is why she's on. Fresh Violet, Melbourne MC and producer, is going to be coming in.
Awesome stuff. And Jen will be back next time. Josh, what's coming up for you?
Just really trying to beat off depression. I've just done an anagram. Sandro, an anagram of your name is Faces or Land.
Oh.
Faces or Land. Which do you choose?
Faces or Land. I choose Faces.
Hey, you chose wisely.
It's good.
Thank you so much for your time, Sandro. Josh, thank you everyone for listening in. We'll be back. What do you think about the things that we talked about? Send us some feedback at feedback.nerdout@gmail.com or on Facebook. Links are in the description. And if you've anything you want us to talk about or review, shoot us an email and we'd love to hear from you. So we're on iTunes and all those other type of devices. Look out, Nerd Out. You'll find us there. And until next time, you know what? Go out and treat yourself and nerd out.
You are just listening to Nerd Out with Rob Lloyd, Jen Spears, and Sandro Fulch. This has been an Improbable Podcast production. We'd like to thank RTI and the Ace Radio Network for allowing us to record in their studios. The views expressed are those of the speaker and not necessarily reflect those of the other speakers, the studios, or the network. The opening and closing music for the show is Denial by Dark Shadows. No copyright infringement towards any of the topics we discuss was intended. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Sue, I am talking into the microphone. I am taking advantage of the proximity effect to get increased bass response. Though there is a bit of sibilance with my S, so we might need a de-esser. Is this part of it? I've got here, Victoria Police will conduct a burn of an area near the Great Ocean Road. Is that anything to do with this?
That's the other person's show. I think that's...
Jessica Charlesville, you've left your book here.
I think they were doing news, maybe?
We'll pass that on to Jess.
Well, what did I...